It all started in 2009 with a challenge to New York Times food writers Kim Severson and Julia Moskin. Cook a dinner party for six for under $50. The judge would be the newspaper's restaurant critic, Frank Bruni. And since both women are accomplished cooks, picking a winner wouldn't be easy. As Bruni says, these were the first two dinners that ever gave me indigestion before, not during, the actual eating. Maybe to play it safe, after all, his cubicle was between theirs at the time, Bruni called the cook-off a tie. But even though Kim moved on to become the Atlanta bureau chief for the Times, the event did inspire the new book, Cookfight. It has a year's worth of recipes from Kim and Julia for, among other things, a meal for kids, a picnic, and an open house. And as you'll find out if you read the book, they sometimes have very different approaches. Kim and Julia are with us in the studio to tell us more. Kim Severson, welcome.
Hi.
And Julia Moskin, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having us.
So the Frank Bruni Challenge is the first chapter of the book for the month of January, since the chapters go month by month. Kim, how did the cook-off come about?
Well, we would sit around, of course, at the Times and think about what we were going to write for the section. And because Frank would always hear us every day challenging each other, loving up each other as work wives, talking about food relentlessly, Julian would come in and go, God, I have this leg of lamb, and I think I'm just going to roast it this way. I'd be like, I can't believe you're going to roast a leg of lamb again. I mean, that's ridiculous. Why don't you try this? And so because Frank had heard this forever and ever, he goes, here's the thing. Why don't you two cook a dinner and see if you can do it under $50. This was, of course, when the recession was at its worst. And, you know, nobody wants another recipe for ground beef in a recession. I mean, it's like the biggest newspaper food story cliche. So anyway, he said, $50, dinner party, I'll come judge them.
And you cooked very different meals. Kim, yours was a Mexican fiesta. And Julia, yours was more refined French puffs, cheese pastry puffs, and escarole salad with anchovy garlic dressing. So right off the bat, you accentuate your differences. And Kim, you said work wives. How do you define that?
Well, a work wife is that person who always has your back in the office. Maybe they sit next to you. They're always the one that overhears you in a fight with your partner on the phone. They know when your kid is sick. They know just how you like your coffee. Like, I know Julia likes hers just a little bit like hazelnutty color, you know. You spend more time at work probably with your work wife or husband than you do with your own spouse. So they're an important part of any work environment.
But you're very different people. Julia, would you say that your book gets energy not only from your intense friendship, but from your clashes?
Oh, definitely, because I think we had each had many colleagues in the past, but possibly not people who we had ever cooked with so much, and people who with whom we had such different approaches to cooking and such different backgrounds. You know, Kim is from the Midwest. Her mom is Italian. She has a Scandinavian side of the family. She's actually worked in restaurant kitchens, and she's been covering food for a long time. I'm from Manhattan. I was named after Julia Child. I grew up like six blocks from Zabar's.
And can I point out she has private yoga instruction? Thank you.
Kim plays sports. She's allowed to write sports metaphors. I don't.
Because so you get them wrong.
So we just have a lot of different, our fallbacks are different. So even though we're both able to pull off almost any recipe, we both work with chefs, we both have learned a huge amount in our careers, there is just kind of that core where we're very different cooks.
So let's talk about the challenge for March, which for some reason was creating a meal for children. And Julia, you poke fun at the fact that Kim suggests feeding children Caesar salad.
It's not that children might not eat Caesar salad. My feeling, however, is that you have to cook things that children are going to like. Some children like Caesar salad, some don't. I try more, rather than pushing them in the direction of grown-up food, to try to make kid food that I know that they're going to like, but that adults also like to eat. One of my favorite recipes in the book actually is a macaroni and cheese pancake,
which obviously
combines two favorite things of childhood. And I'm not sure who likes those better, kids or adults, because everybody eats them.
Kim, you seem to credit kids with a more sophisticated palate than maybe Julia does.
Well, I think it's all in how you present it to the kids. And I don't think you need to dumb down your food for a child, Miss Moskin. But why not, if you're going to make a party, make something that everybody likes? And there's a bean soup, a white bean soup in that chapter that I do. And you could serve it in little Demitasse cups for kids. They think it's like a tea party. She's like, don't look at me.
Julia's
like that.
Making a face here.
It's still white bean soup. And kids still know that it's going to be white bean soup, and they're not going to eat it. And what I have found myself doing so many times is when I have a whole family over, and sometimes I say, you know what, I'm not going to make special food for the kids. They're just going to eat what I'm serving. And then I end up, of course, in the kitchen making macaroni and cheese
which they
while
really
the rest of the party
along.
Is going on, because you have to feed them something, and the parents will certainly give you the stink eye if you do not have food available for their kids.
The challenge for July was picnic. And Kim, you start your introduction to that chapter with, "This is America." So you bring out, you know, picnic staple like fried chicken. And also you have potato salad, but there's no mayonnaise in that potato salad. And Julia, that leads you to call Kim a mayonnaise snob and also a salad snob. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, Kim kind of likes to paint herself as like the true American and the voice of the heartland in our relationship. And I am like the Carrie Bradshaw of the East Coast. But the fact is that she has many great, you know, ideas and tastes in food, but she will not eat mayonnaise in a jar, which I consider an extremely American staple.
However, I will point out that I do like homemade mayonnaise. I just think that stuff in the jar, to me, I can taste the processedness of it. It tastes kind of sweet. Oh, princess. Who really is a princess? It's not me.
Princess and the pea, she can taste the process.
Do you always taste each other's recipes, or are there some things you just say, it's not for me?
Oh, no, you know, as a professional food writer, you have to pretty much taste everything. And that's part of the deal is, and anybody who has a friend they love to cook with, even if your dish isn't great, they'll taste it and they'll go, well, this is good. You know, I think I might have added more lemon, or maybe I wouldn't have put in that raw fish at the end, or, you know, whatever thing they say. And, you know, if you trust each other, you don't take that as criticism. You take it as like, oh, you could be right. Or I can say, you know, I think you're completely wrong. You know, without that raw tuna on the top, the dish is lousy. Or, you know, but that's, I think, the beauty of, I mean, we do compete a lot, but it's having someone who you really trust. And I trust Julia's palate a lot. I don't always agree with it. But, you know, when you're making something with someone, it's like calling up someone on the phone, a brother, a sister, a fellow cook, and going, making this thing, it's not quite turning out. And they may have a tip for you, or they'll go, oh, just why are you fooling with that? And you go, you know what? This is why I never cook with you. You can hang up, but
you
then
can
you're friends again.
That.
So when you were designing your different recipes for each month, were you cooking side by side somewhere? Were you in your separate kitchens and then comparing what you came up with?
That's rarely possible. I mean, what I was thinking of when Kim was just speaking is that there was a lot of passing back and forth of containers from one cubicle to another, because we would have to, you know, cook in our separate kitchens and then bring stuff to work and say, I would make Kim taste something and say, like, okay, what's wrong with this? Did I not cook the flour for long enough? Or is it too much salt? Is it not enough garlic? So that was pretty much how we did it. One of the worst ideas we ever had was to do our Thanksgiving cook fight side by side in one kitchen with our boss and his family as the guests.
Why did that
not
go?
You never have your boss to dinner when you're a food writer and you're writing recipes for the section. Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, for food writers, Thanksgiving is like the Super Bowl, the presidential election, and a hurricane all at once. You know, it just blows through your life for about 6 weeks at the end of every year, because you go Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's Eve, and you have to figure out stuff to do. So this was about the end of October. We were running out of time, and we realized we were going to have to do our Thanksgiving cook fights side by side, sharing oven space. You know, we were running up and down in the elevator. And meanwhile, you know, everything had to be good because we were cooking it for the boss.
And when you say running up and down in the elevator, Julia, we were doing it at Julia's Upper West Side Manhattan kitchen. And we just did not have the oven space, so she borrowed an apartment from someone upstairs. So it was like Lucy and Ethel do Thanksgiving. Trust me, it was hilarious.
Kim Severson and Julia Moskin are food writers for The New York Times. Their book is Cook Fight, Two Cooks, 12 Challenges, 125 Recipes, An Epic Battle for Kitchen Dominance. Julia and Kim, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Please join us again here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.